This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for all mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back to do a wrap-up for season four. Give our final thoughts, see what you guys thought about the episode and the season as a whole, and just generally chat about for all mankind until we sit it back up on the shelf for another year, 2 years. Who knows? Aaron, how are we doing in the feedback department this time?
Rolling deep.
Nice.
It was a real union of podcast email 403 branch forming here, just collectively come together and make a podcast for us, because okay. We spent 2.5 hours talking about it last week. I was kind of talked out, and on further reflection, I was, you know, it's always a little scary when we have the screeners, because like, you know, that's our unvarnished opinion. It's not like I can go and be like, oh, see how things are, and oh, I might need to temper my, not that I do that, but it's like the temptation's always there, right? And I'm extra nervous throwing something out, being like,
I don't want to say I temper my opinion. I appreciate things in a different light when I hear other people's views on them. That's what I would
that's
say.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Like, oh, I just, but like, you know, when you're just spitting there and it's just you and me talking, I'm always wondering like, oh man, maybe we really missed a mark. But I think that we had our finger on the pulse.
Okay.
It does seem like most of at least the Bald Move portion of the fan base, and it looks like it's also representative on the For All Mankind subreddit, is that, yeah, this is seen as an obvious step down, you know?
Yeah,
in terms of quality overall of the season. But also, I did see some, but it seemed in a minority opinion that people are just done with the show.
That's crazy.
It could be a highly emotional reaction to a disappointing season. Like, you know, are people really going to not tune in next year to see?
Right.
You know, how they're going to like it? How bad will Ed's makeup be?
yeah, that'll be interesting.
I want to see Margot's wake up routine in prison.
There's
a lot. There's lots of intrigue for next year. It's just that it's getting to this point to where a lot of times I'd be like, well, I'm not sure about something that happened this season, but like, I've got so much faith in this team and the track record, starting to erode a bit. So next season, I think, is kind of make or break. Like, you got to develop these new characters. You got to get them to where they're as engaging as Ed or Tracy or Danielle or Margot. You got to sweat the geopolitics, man. You can't.
And the details, you know, you can't just let the dots sort of dangle out there without connections and hope that the audience will forgive that. You got to connect them for them.
And I think there's the other thing that a lot of people noticed is most of these seasons are kind of self-contained in ramifications. Like the finale pretty much closes and trims up all threads and gets us nice and set for we know what's going to happen with all the major characters, or pretty much. They're in some point of state. We have no idea. Like, is anyone on Mars going to face justice? Is Earth just going to be like, well, you got us. You got our asteroid. We're done. Yeah, like what is going to happen with all these people who went rogue from 6 billion people's perspectives? I don't know, and I hope that we have answers to that coming back next season. But also, I could see them just rolling back, like, oh yeah, Mars, and it's nice, and Ed's the old man of Mars still, except for more so, and Dev is the unquestioned ruler of Mars, and
Miles,
how did they pull that off?
The businessman of Mars, yeah.
Still no guns on Mars because we're not doing. But like, you know, because the one thing is like, I can't imagine Earth as a response doesn't militarize Mars. You know,
yeah,
like,
or at least try to.
Yeah, we've tried the whole no weapons in space thing, but it's always gone bad. So we're going to go back to the old human the only way to trust people is to be well-armed and well-prepared and strong, because no fucking way are we going to let 500 monkeys waylay a whole planet again. I just like, so it's going to fundamentally change things, but I don't know that the show knows that. So there's a lot, I think, more so than most seasons, of postponed judgment about this season based on where we end up in season five. So I don't know. You want to, you got anything else you want to say, or shall we get right into it?
Not really. I generally feel the same now as I did a week ago when we talked about it. I think, yeah, like you said, it's they need to tighten things up for season five, and I don't know if that means to bring just spending more time on it, if that means bringing in people who can sweat those details. I'm sure they have some of the writers who did that stuff so well in season three, season two, season one. But yeah, they need to do something over there, because this season kind of came off the rails.
Yeah, so we're going to get right into the feedback. But while I have everyone's attention, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. One that's really fun that I'm excited about, which is Jim and I's annual, I guess Bald Moves annual Groundhog Day marathon is coming up. That's something we've been done for six, this will be seventh year running, where on Groundhog Day, we started watching the movie Groundhog Day on repeat for a full 24 hours. This year we're going to be watching all the Spider-Man film. Yes, all of them. That one, yes, that one too. Maybe not all of them.
Almost,
I think there's some 70s yeah. Spider-Man movies that we're not going to be able to show in their entirety, although maybe in part. But yeah, all of the main sequence, the Maguires, the Garfields, the Miles Morales, of course, the Tom Hollands. We're going to be watching those. We're going to have a bunch of special guests joining us. We're going to have games and prizes. And it's all to raise money for charity. We've raised just over $100,000 for charity in the 6 years we've been doing it.
Oh, really?
We are raising money for the Cure Owls Foundation. I have a personal connection to that disease. I'm very passionate about curing it in my lifetime. Cure Owls is a great charity, and 100% of your donations will go to them, and 100% of your donations going to them will be used for Alzheimer's research to attempt to find a cure and effective treatment for it. So join us. You can go to groundhog.baldmove.com for the full schedule. We've got the movies broken down by minute, like when they're starting and stopping. It's a good time. We're broadcasting it simultaneously on Twitch and YouTube for the entire 24 hours. Please join us. It'd mean a lot for you to show up and cheer us on. And of course, a donation would not be amiss either. Secondly, this is the end for all mankind, but we're just getting the year started. Please follow us on your choice of social media, at Bald Move, if you haven't already. Unless it's TikTok, it's at Baldest Move over there. So you can keep up with what we're doing, because we've got a pretty action-packed start of the year. And of course, we're expecting House of the Dragon. Severance. God, Severance. We'll get Severance this year. Maybe outside chance of getting a Last of Us season two. Certainly perhaps early next year. The only way to find out and keep up with us, our social media is at Bald Move. Okay.
You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre, We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald maneuvers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Bob, welcome back to more For All Mankind.
Bunch of people send in stuff to fam at baldmove.com. Aki is up first. Says, according to an article on Entertainment Weekly, and I'm going to quote from it, Chris Marshall, who plays Danielle Poole, wanted good Danny to die. Apparently, when they're starting to work on season four, she suggested to the showrunners that Danny needed to die. Her reasoning was that she knew people really loved the character, so it would be a real gut punch to have her killed off. They went back and forth on whether she would not die until the final script was written. They wrote a version where she died, but the showrunner said they just couldn't do it. They said they would rather make people believe she would die only to not. Chris Marshall was really happy with how it all ended up as far as her character, saying, oftentimes when you see alternate history shows, they exist in dystopic worlds where it's post-apocalyptic, the air is made of acid, everyone's fighting for their lives and living subterranean. I love that in our alternate timeline, it's not that. It's actually pretty optimistic. It's not euphoric, but it's not dystopic. It felt right in the grand scheme of our world to continue to keep our eyes on the horizon and believe that tomorrow can be a brighter than today. That's from an Entertainment Weekly article.
Somebody watched Silo.
True. Did you... I was kind of surprised to see Chris Marshall campaigning for good Danny to die, but it one of the biggest gut punches in small screen history.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. It would be pretty devastating. And again, plenty of characters we like live and survive in all kinds of shows, and I'm happy for that. I guess if you really just want the drama, though, sure, you kill the characters you like.
She also mentioned she would not have a problem playing 60-plus-year-old Danny in future seasons, so that's nice, because I can't imagine this is the end of her act. Like, maybe, because maybe the story of her being a grandma and sitting on the couch and watching Star Trek with their grandbabies. But it would be wild to, like, the grand old lady of the moon and Mars, if there is one, it's her, for her to retire to quiet private life.
Yeah, pulls an Ellen, becomes president, and then just does nothing for the next, I don't know, 30 years. How long is she gonna live?
Do you think Ellen will ever come back?
It doesn't seem like it. You would think this would be they would at least keep her in the season somehow, like on the periphery, if they were gonna bring her back. So no, because I think about what they did with Margo. They kept her around. Yeah. Even when she didn't have much to do, right? It was like dealing with her blindness and then just kind of having spats with Margo. I meant Molly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they would have kept Ellen around if they wanted to use her later.
And it's kind of a convention, I guess, until recently, for American presidents, when they're done at the office, they kind of, purposely retreat from the limelight to give their predecessors, kind of a chance to not suck the oxygen out of the room and all that. So it would make sense that, her and Pam are just going to live happily ever after. But also have those characters on the shelf if they need them.
Up next, it's either Al or AI Chalant. I don't know if there's some kind of AI writing in, but we'll see based on the email. Lee's wife smuggled onto Mars during high alert equals fucking clown shoes. Ridiculous. Unforgivable. Other thing, Kelly was literally just like absent during the entire finale until Danny was shot and on the table. And then she just strolls up out of nowhere and holds Ed's hand. I'm disappointed we didn't get to see if old man Mars actually came clean to his daughter and what her reaction was after their abrupt scene ended last week. Otherwise, I think they pulled the finale together pretty well for the bumpy ride up to this point. New characters Sam and Miles got to shine a bit. Satisfying character arcs ending, arc ending for Margo finally taking responsibility and accepting consequences to throw the space program forward another 10 years. Thanks for the pod, guys. You guys doing True Detective, right? Yes. Yes, we are. We're doing it right now, actually. We just released our first episode.
Right now. But well, as soon as we're done recording this, we'll be...
In the totality of time, this is pretty much right now. True Detective is pretty much right now. So, yeah, we just released our first episode of that over in the World We Deserve feed or Prestige feed right here, where you might be listening to this.
A flat circle anyway. And we already did our promoing. What the hell? What do you?
Hey,
what
I didn't prompt this, man, unless I'm AI Chalant. You never
Maybe
know.
Maybe you are. You're awful nonchalant. I want to talk about this Kelly thing because that's something I know that me and B. Michael were talking about, that we gave that a lot of props. That like, oh, they actually are going to have this kind of showdown between Kelly and Ed.
Who? Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they did, but they didn't. Like, you know, they have this kind of emotional scene, and then, like, and you're like, oh, you know, you kind of get rope-a-dope like you expect Kelly would, to like, oh, Ed is, you know, sharing so much emotional truth.
Uh-huh.
She'll forget, like, why she brought this up in the first place, and she, like, dries her eyes and, like, thank you for sharing, and that's really nice, Dad, but also, cut the shit, what the fuck is really going on?
Does Ed get out of that conversation? Does he just, like... stand up and slowly back out of the room, and they never see each other.
He does like a Homer Simpson where he just melts into the hedge and disappears. Right beside the orange tree, they got a hedge. It's his marijuana farm. He just taps on a panel, opens it up, disappears into the green, the green jungle. I think this is just slopshod storytelling. You know, like that is just a That's just a drop ball. That is a question that you yourself asked and brought up and then showed zero interest in, because her holding his hand, does that mean he told her the full truth and she's like, I'm on board with you being Martian George Washington? Does that mean he lied to her and she thought he got caught up in this riot and this is all based on like we fucking don't know this her
no,
holding
there's
her
no
hand
answer
is,
there
so it's like if you don't understand this does it, it, it I've always said this in terms of action scenes, whereas if I don't understand the stakes or what is going on in the character's interior, then these action scenes are meaningless. Like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I never said about a dramatic scene, but like, yeah, what does that mean that Kelly grabs her old man's hand?
I, the best I can come up with is it means we both love Danielle, and I know this is hurting you as much as it's hurting me, but that doesn't answer the question that was hanging in the air the last time we saw them.
She spent the last 48 hours just letting her old man plot with Dev to steal this asteroid. I don't know. It feels like an oversight.
Oh, it is.
Rachel's up next, says, I love listening to your podcast, but Arg! She's getting into the asteroid piracy, I can only assume.
All right.
But I watched the season finale. I'm so mad for the show. I've seen plenty of heist movies, and I know what makes them fun. What makes them fun is rooting for the heisters to succeed. But I did not want these heisters to succeed. I wanted them all to fail, and maybe hopefully definitely die in the process, so I could be sure these characters would not return to haunt me in potential future seasons. All season long, my loathing for Ed Baldwin, Dev Iessa, and Miles, whoever, has grown and grown. For me, they're all completely unlikable, arrogant, smarmy characters. Also, What the hell is Kelly only appearing for 5 seconds in the entire episode for? Kelly's 100 times more emotionally intelligent than her man-baby father. Her research, Damar's life-seeking storyline, barely existed this season. Your listener who thought Dev might have planned to drop the asteroid into the to the crater actually had a better plot idea than the writers. Imagine Ed realizing that Dev was going to do that, and maybe for once in his god-dang life did the right thing for a noble cause and saved Damar's life instead of fueling his own need to be the big old man of Mars and make trillions of dollars. Bald move. It has taken me years to recover from Gordo and Tracy's deaths. Talk about a great storyline. Gordo's journey to redeem himself, the connection with Tracy, the visceral horror of watching their bodies fall apart in the lunar atmosphere to avert nuclear meltdown. Yes, like every For All Mankind finale, the contrivances to get the plot crisis were eye-roll worthy, but I went with it because I cared. I was emotionally invested. I cried and cried and cried. I tear up just thinking about it even days and weeks and months later. Similar with season 3, rocketing pregnant Kelly to the spaceship, ridiculous. But I enjoyed watching it and I cared what happened to her. Was the Danny Karen storyline awful? Yes, hell yes it was, but I still cared about Karen and felt so sad when she died. Not this season. And that's my big fear for season 5, because if you look at the if you look at Miles, you look at Sam, you look at Elaida, you look at Kelly, you look at Dev, I'm only 50% as invested in Elaida and Kelly as I am in any of the mainline season 1, season 2 characters. And the others are trailing way behind that level of involvement. So it's like, you know, maybe you can make chicken liver out of chicken shit, but what if you don't got chicken shit?
Yeah. I'm really invested in Elaida, but her storyline was so tied in with Margo that now it's kind of at its end, right? We're at the end of that thread. So what are they going to do to make a new thread that's going to interest me with her? But yeah, you're right. I mean, not a lot to go on.
They might literally make Elaida the new Margo. Like, I could see them starting with her sleeping in her office and doing the whole, and like she just takes over as being the, but like, it's interesting because she's not Margo, because Margo didn't have a life, literally.
If Elaida
did that in 2012, I'd assume her husband has divorced her. Her kids have nothing to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
That would be sad. But I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I don't know where they go with Elaida, but I am emotionally invested in Elaida. I like her a lot.
Are you emotionally invested in Dev?
More so than I was before this season, I think, but not much.
Granted.
Okay. Not much.
Are you emotionally invested in Kelly?
Yes, but not as much as Elaida.
And the thing is, am I emotionally invested in Kelly? Or
the Alex stuff did a lot.
That's what I'm saying. Or am I emotionally invested in a mother who's got a sick child who's trying to do what's best? Like, because I also kind of want to echo what Rachel's saying here about the whole life mission. That's a cool idea. And it was kind of just like a motivation to get a person on a rocket.
Yeah.
It didn't really pay off in any other grander way. And it's just.
And even getting Kelly on the rocket didn't. Yeah, that didn't pay off.
And you know what it tells me too?
And Alex stuff should have been better. What?
It tells me that she didn't find life in this crater. Because how the fuck are you going to find life in a crater between now and 2012? How are you going to yada yada through that? How are you going to put that into the 5-minute, here's what you missed crawl? You know?
Yeah.
So
no, I assume she's still going to be looking for it when we come back, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, it might take longer than 10, 15 years to find life on Mars, but it's just one of those things where it's just another. Or maybe they will. Maybe they will find life in like 2008 and they will yada yada it. And because it's like, it's just bacteria and it's no big deal.
Yeah, it's not going to be some highly advanced organism.
Maybe the tension is the people that want to exploit the Martian resources and the people who are like, you are trampling on a pristine, virgin landscape that could tell us infinite things about our own origins. And it's going to be another science for science sake versus science for industry's sake. And who will win?
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, they do need to do better on that front. All right. Charlie Ross says, hi, Bob. I was struck by how this Ed seemingly had two totally disconnected plots. His handshaking stuff, and then Martian Revolutionary. So I thought I'd take a stab at it. Number one, open the season with Ed looking surprisingly sharp and fit by leaning into the health benefits of Mars, and show him noticeably less aged than the difference between seasons 2 and 3. Okay, so we're rewriting the season here is what we're doing.
Yes, he's trying to fix the Ed plot.
Number two, announce Helios getting assigned to lead the Ranger asteroid capture over NASA and Roscosmos because their bid was cheaper, and when Kuznetsov raises concerns, Ed is still a red-blooded conservative free market baby. Then when the mission fails due to a mistake by underpaid Helios employees, Ed is scapegoated. After Ed's retired, number three, from pilot duties, one of the two, he's put on a return-to-Earth training routine, and the doctors stress to him how challenging it'll be to prepare for full G. This is also an opportunity for a badass training montage with fun low-G effects like Ed doing push-ups, pull-ups very easily, and benching comically large weights. All right, I like that.
I'd love to
see Martian weights, man. Oh, they're huge.
Yeah, he's putting up 400 pounds, no problem.
Number four, he also has downtime to investigate the issues with Helios employees that led to the mission failure and teams up with Massey, who radicalizes him into a labor activist. Legitimately or for his own purposes?
Because I think radicalized, that's a more legitimate than him just deciding to do it to fuck over Danny.
Number five, Ed later checks in with the medical and is approved to go home, but is told about all the things that could go wrong for him upon returning to Earth and decides that he would rather stay on Mars forever, where he is strong and respected. Now, I think he's primed for Dev to go to get him in on stealing the asteroid, as he identifies as a Martian. The season could continue from here, but as is, but just for fun, since I like the asteroid crash theory, it would be reasonable for Lee to tell Ed about the gun since they are on the same side of the revolution. Then Ed tells Sam to retrieve it before the final Ranger mission. When the ghost ops is discovered, they use North Korean S-band antenna to tell Sam to shoot the Ranger controls, causing the engines to keep burning, ultimately crashing the asteroid to the surface and securing it for Mars. Just sacrificing Sam to do it. In my opinion, this would fit into the progress is never free theme they are selling with Margo and Aleta. Need somebody to pay. We don't know that people didn't pay, but we also don't know that they did.
Right. And it's like, you know, seeing people in jail 12 years from now, 10 years from now is not as satisfying as seeing the present. I mean, it's hard to write this stuff, and you know, you change one thing, it changes a million other things. But the thing I liked about his suggestion is, I agree. I thought it was a rough transition from Ed being the self-satisfied, old hand at space exploration, shitting on these workers, these entitled workers, to him being this revolutionary figure. And it kind of works a little bit in that, like, well, you know, not all the hearts in a revolution are pure, and not everyone does things for the right reasons of, you know, fraternity, equality, and liberty, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the thing. Like, I think they needed to, and having like Ed's strength kind of like fail him, or having like the threat of that happening and him realizing he's a Martian kind of organically, and I think it would have been a step in the right direction. Something to just a hairpin turn, I think, I felt like his character took.
Yeah, looking back, I wonder how much it has to do directly with Svetlana and her whole plight. Because I'm thinking he's just pissed off. Like, halfway through that season, he's just so pissed off that he's just trying to tear everything down. And it's Dev who comes in and sort of funnels that in a direction.
Yeah.
But, like, it definitely wasn't satisfying. And I don't think it was ever intended to be satisfying, right? Ed, they intended this season for us to kind of turn on Ed, because he turned on everybody. Mm-hmm. So if you're not in for that ride, I guess, yeah, it's pretty rough. I think all the stuff around Kelly and Alex was the worst part of Ed this season. I think they got to a point with me where I... appreciated why Ed was doing the things he was doing, even if I didn't like them. I think they connected those dots pretty well, unlike some other things in this show that they definitely didn't. So I don't know, I changed too much with Ed.
Let's move on to Jessica, who has another Ed suggestion. I think the Ed's motivation to establish a Mars as a permanent settlement could have been helped along by the addition of a single scene. If Kelly had messaged him about her guilt of possibly leaving Alex behind to come to Mars, Ed could have been the one to suggest she bring him along. He could have had some epiphany about becoming a family again and making Mars their real home. Wouldn't have fixed everything with Ed, but at least his motives would have felt more genuine and less acting out of spite. I kind of do like that. That Ed's like, well, yeah, come here because, you know, I've been talking to Dimitri and the Demi, and he said that, like, you know, your son's or grandson's lungs are going to be better and blah, 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 blah. And then him see the dream of Mars start slipping away. And it's something more than just some esoteric kind of principle of space exploration and his personal glory he's fighting for. He's fighting for, you know, that's more traditionally revolutionary grounds. But mm-hmm. I do think they deliberately, you're right, that they kind of wanted to write Ed as a bit of a self-satisfied asshole, which
is not comfortable.
It's also not outside his character profile. Like, he kind of is a knee-jerk, yeah, reactionary, exclusionary old boys kind of thing.
Every time his character has been nudged in a positive direction, it's been somebody else pointing out how much of a shit he's being.
Yeah.
And then him reluctantly agreeing with them.
I do wish they'd use Danny's death as a springboard to finally see the error of his ways. And the other way they could have done, yeah, it, when I was thinking of these emails, is like, what if it just turns out that old man Ed is just a really good mentor. Like, he is very involved in, like, Sam and, like, you know, knows that she's been wanting to be an astronaut forever and is trying to coach her. And he's frustrated at how Helios is fucking around and denying her scheduled shifts and spacewalking and you know, he could have been a mentor, mm-hmm, instead of like a lover of Svetlana. He could have just been like this mentor, frustrated at all the politics and all of the bureaucracy and all of the profit seeking and that's getting in the way of making cool astronauts. And mm-hmm, then mm-hmm, he's like organically posed to be that kind of revolutionary figure and kind of be this light. But again, for whatever reason, the showrunners wanted Ed to kind of go down and make kind of almost no personal growth at all.
Yeah, I don't know if they have something big planned for him next season or if this is the swan song and he's just going to, yeah, be remembered as kind of an asshole.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I mean, he's, yeah. Well, anyway.
All right, Rob C has some random observations and problems with the finale. And we'll take these take these as they come, maybe talk about,
sure,
them. Some of the passage of time seems off. Comms between the different places, events on Earth and Mars not lining up, etc. Mildly annoying, but not enough to ruin the episode. I could not tell you how much time elapses between the discovery of this asteroid and the actual capture of it. It could be, at some point they say we have like 10 weeks to get this project done, period. And if we don't do that, the window is gone. We can't capture this thing. And then somewhere along the way, Dev convinces Kelly to fly to Mars. And Dev gets to Mars and hatches a plan to steal the asteroid. And Sam spends a month on Ranger. The timelines are very tight if they line up at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also, they feel like they were playing fast and loose with the communication delay with Mars. Like, and I know it fluctuates depending on where Mars is and its orbit in conjunction with Earth and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, uh-huh, it kind of bothered me that the end, Will's like, and there's a 5-minute delay. I'm like, a 5-minute delay? Not like a 5-minute and 12-second delay or a 4-minute and 53-second delay or just a 5-minute delay.
Sure. This is NASA, yeah.
And like when they're counting down the seconds, I kind of think the timer showed five, and it's like, it's just little stuff where it's almost like that's a placeholder they put in the script and like, we'll get someone to get the orbital mechanics right and we'll get that nailed down, and they just never did. And it's like, I feel like that's a lot of the season is like first draft ideas that were pressed into service because they couldn't decide whether they're going to kill off Chris Marshall or not, you know, or they,
sure,
you know, maybe they were unsure of a lot of this stuff themselves, but they just couldn't think of anything better with the, you know, the fact that the production was shutting down and they had to get all this stuff wrapped. And I don't know, but it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I still want to know about that timer thing with the 5-minute delay and there being 2 minutes left on the timer when they send the code. I cannot square that in my head.
Like maybe if it's a round trip delay and they're it's like it's not quite 5 minutes, not quite 2 minutes, but why would they say it like that?
Even if it's round trip, it's 2.5 minutes. I don't get it. I hope somebody wrote in and told us what happened there, because I desperately need to know.
Anyway, Rob's got a lot more bullets, so.
Oh, a ton, yeah. Bullet number two, I got the impression that Eli knew what happened to Sergey. Maybe it's just vague writing, but he tells Margo that we should talk about this when he should have no idea what this is.
I don't know. I think that's more of a guy seeing a woman obviously distraught about something with her Soviet handler that's underhanded, and he's just offering his neutral ground of his office to, like, do you got anything to say to me in, like, an official capacity? We can talk about this thing happening in front of me, not...
Gotcha, yeah. This is her stink she's making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he would have any advanced knowledge of that at all.
No.
In fact, I don't think anyone knows at large that Sergey is even working on this project. This is all supposedly clandestine.
Yeah, for sure. All right, the show has done an amazing heel turn right before our eyes. Ed, Dev, and Margo were all in the villain category most of this season. They've layered in the sympathies with their motivations all season, but this episode has them fully as heroes, reinforced by the score, and it works. Mostly.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I thought they made some weird choices on when to play the heroic music and when to play the villain's plotting music, and they kind of like flipped that POV.
You can't just play music and expect my heart to swell. I need to be primed. My heart needs to be pumped full of some swelling fluid first.
And the show should have a perspective on this. The show should have a perspective on, like, is NASA evil by trying to scab over the workers? Or is this just them rerouting damage like they have in every other season? You know, like, there's a problem with our main thrusters and we're going to go around it. There's a problem with our fueling facility and it's because the labor. So we're going to go. I don't know, because they were the villains in that scene, but they're the heroes when they're stealing the asteroid. So.
He continues, no way Miles and that other guy are tough enough to stand up to the punishment they took. I guess that's Hollywood. Here's the thing. It's not about toughness to me. It's about stakes. And what does Miles have at stake here? He gives up the information. What does he lose? Nothing.
I think he would rightly fear that he would lose the financial stability that he's earned his family, and in his mind that's the equivalent to losing his family.
You think so? I mean, these people all get busted and court-martialed and arrested and sent back to Earth, and he doesn't come out of that okay?
I mean, so his wife had left him and was had divorce papers prepared for him that she wanted him to sign. Uh-huh. And his entire life turned around with his Martian gig and the money that it's bringing in. So, like, I don't know if it's true.
Because, well, they already know he's smuggling. Like, he didn't know that, right?
But he didn't know that. So now it's like he's got these two intelligence officers saying, we know about your black market shit. We know all about this stuff. And we also think you're involved with these terrorists. You better tell us or else. It's like, I think it's a credible threat to his family's livelihood.
Okay. And then they make
what are his prospects if he gets busted down the earth in disgrace? You know, does he go get another job? But I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Just take a big bag of Mars rocks with you. You'll be fine.
But I do, like, I think, I also think that the one thing that made it okay for me is this is a ticking time bomb situation where the interrogator knows exactly, the person who's being interrogated knows exactly how long they have to hold up for her. So
sure.
It's like, if you can tell yourself last. This is going to be terrible, but it's only going to be for another hour, or especially when they let off on the, you know, it's like he stood up for like, what, a minute of like intense torture, and then they're like, ah, fuck it, we don't have time for this, we got to give up. I don't know. It's tough, though.
Yeah,
you're right.
As compared to like Margot, who is being chained to a pipe in the ceiling by Russian goons in the gulag and has no idea. This could last the rest of her life.
Yeah.
You know.
I've read of torture, though, it does seem like almost everyone breaks and fairly quickly. And when they break, you don't usually get actionable intelligence. But the one time that you can maybe justify it is on these like Jack Bauer style ticking time bombs, where it's like, you know, this guy's got a bomb. It's going to blow up in 15 minutes. I don't have time to build a rapport. I don't have time to isolate him. I don't have time to deprive him of sleep. I don't have time to, like, I have to get him to say something, especially if you had like compatriots. If you had three guys, you could isolate, torture the shit out of, and see who's, stories are matching. But like, yeah, they were taking Hail Mary shots, it seems like.
Another point here, unless Margot gave away to her credentials, there's no way they would not know who put in what code. Yeah, but like I said, it's not about who put in the code, it's about what code went in and who wrote that code, right?
Yeah. Now I'd
love
to be in the Senate hearing when they're like, okay, this line where it says reboot reactor semicolon.
Jesus.
Yeah, you were typing really fast and Margot gave you that code, but didn't you see, like, yeah, but I don't know, some 80-year-old fucker that doesn't know anything would probably be asking that question, and he'd be asking the wrong one, and they'd be showing pictures of Hunter Biden's dick, and who knows, the whole thing would be a fiasco.
Had
his dick out in 2002. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
Slinging that thing for decades.
Look, man, a lot of dicks were out in 2002. Let's not kid ourselves. The internet didn't invent getting your dick out.
True.
All right. Would have thought Margot's boss would have fought to keep her in Soviet custody. Maybe given the nature of the crime, it wasn't possible. Her higher-ups just made a decision without her knowledge, and that was that.
Yeah. And I think that you're supposed to understand that her boss has no power. Like, and my reading is that
not at that point.
My reading is that even if she'd wanted to drag Margot back to Russia, this might have been something that the new premier is just like, look, this is humiliating. This is just a complete collapse. I want nothing more to do with it. I don't want more trials. I don't want more hearings. I just want to punish everyone. I want to scapegoat this on the bullfinch. Mm-hmm. She's the one that let this happen. She was negligent, and then we can just move forward.
And finally, they yada yada the resolution of the fight. No one swings on Ed or Danny. Everyone just stops fighting. Weren't the military also armed? They were, with less than lethal rounds.
Yeah. It does seem like they wanted Danny being shot to be this big sobering. And I think it could be, you know, you've got, this is a small base. Everyone knows everyone. Everyone knows Danny's reputation is probably more positive than other administrators, because she tried to get him their family access back, and she tried to do this, she tried to do that. But yeah, I kind of buy it, you know?
Yeah, it's borderline, but I'll go with it.
It also seems like it's just as likely that it would just kick the barbarity up to 10, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Like the second gun, and people are like,
you,
oh shit, people
gun?
Are dying.
Get that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Tear him apart. T-minus 3 seconds until the ad.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Touchdown, and we're back. Let's move on to the Irish Monk, who says, I think any assessment of the latest season should not be limited to comparing the season to previous ones. As a viewer, I'm interested, if not more interested, in how this season compares to other new sci-fi shows on offer. So while this may be the weakest of all four seasons of For All Mankind, it surely remains one of the best current sci-fi TV shows. The Expanse finished, Foundation sits at the top of the pile, but where do you think For All Mankind sits? The next best? I don't count The Last of Us or Black Mirror as sci-fi, and I think FAM tops Strange New Worlds, but there are other contenders maybe. If you're not counting for The Last of Us or Black Mirror, then you probably wouldn't count Severance.
I count Severance, and it's at the top of the pile. It's the best sci-fi on right now, at least that first season.
It's pretty good. But that's a problem with all these shows is like... I learned from from Game of Thrones that until the finale of the series is over, you can't say, because like season 4, season 5, I think many people would have put serious money on this being the greatest show of all time. Mm-hmm. In terms of quality, in terms of worldwide global viewership, like not even Lost in its prime had 100 million people watching it. Mm-hmm. To say nothing of how many people were pirating on top of that. It's truly a phenomenon. And then reasonable people can disagree and be wrong, but it fell to shit and ended up almost destroying such a strong franchise. Yeah.
I don't know, because like I think Strange New Worlds at this point I like a little bit better, or I'm certainly more excited for Strange New Worlds season 3 than I am for All Mankind season 5, and that would have been heresy 2 years ago.
I'm actually more, with the improvements that they made to Foundation season 2, I'm actually more excited about that getting a season 3 than season 5 of For All Mankind. And maybe it's recency bias, right? Like I can look at Foundation through a little bit of rose-colored glasses, being so far away from it, whereas fans very recent.
It's truly big, epic, sweeping sci-fi.
Oh, it's like, sci-fi, right?
Yeah. From its pedigree down to its production, it is proudly sci-fi. And God bless Apple for, because like you'll notice that every one of these shows, except for Strange New Worlds, is an Apple production,
right?
Severance, Foundation, For All Mankind. Mm-hmm. Silo's another excellence.
Yeah.
I had my problems with it, its first season, but it's another excellent sci-fi show. So it's like, God bless Apple for being the sci-fi channel that we used to have and was taken from us by all the cable bullshit in the last two decades. But yeah, they are putting big money in to this in a big way. Almost to where it's like, man, I wish Apple had been around a couple of years before so they could have gotten Expanse. Because we'd probably be talking about how good Expanse season 8 was right about now if that had happened.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I mean, For All Mankind seasons 1 through 3, I would put up against the best of sci-fi that's on right now, and it would stand up admirably. This season, though, has me worried that they just don't have what it takes anymore. They don't got it.
And it's one of maybe it's another thing where it's they were better at adapting, like. What if NASA plans from the 60s and 70s, and now like you're getting into like the DART program, you know, they did use that, but it's not the Sea Dragon, it's not the Jamestown colony on the moon, it's not, you know, a nuclear fusion powered space shuttle, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot more nebulous, and the science is a little, so it's like, are they getting into that adaptation problem? So like, and also what will that look like in For All Mankind in like season 6 or 7 when you're in the 2030s, 2040s? They're in a delicate place right now.
All right, Greg is up and he says, like you guys, I found the plotting this season to be rushed in places and muddled in others, but I don't think I was as down on the season as you. I found season 4, episode 10, a very satisfying ending for this season, and I think that the pieces are set up in an interesting place for them to pick up in 2012. Here are a couple of specific thoughts on the episode and where we end up. First, I think the arrival of Lee's wife along with other stowaways was totally fair and needed no other in-show explanation. It was emotionally satisfying at first viewing, but when I thought about it afterwards and played back the scene, I decided it also makes narrative sense. Here's my headcanon. We'd established that Miles and his network knew how to get Mrs. Lee out of North Korea.
Can we just stop right there? Because this first sentence is roughly along the lines of, we've established that Miles and his network knew how to find a reliable source of unicorn horns.
Okay, yeah.
It's not easy to get people out of North Korea at all.
But by establishing it, you mean Miles said he could do it.
Miles said he could do it, but like all season long, they've been acting like that's an impossible task and they knew it and they were just stringing Lee along.
Yeah.
And that's the narrative. That's the narrative that was all the way through the finale episode. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so anyway, we have a confirmed source of unicorn horns. Let's go.
Yes. Now we just need to get them on the transport. Dev wants Mars to become a thriving society, so it's in his interest to get families there. It's not too much of a jump to think that Helios, which Dev still runs as far as we know, who fly the transports, can ship material without the knowledge of other M7 partners, especially if it's in a discreet Helios shipping container, just like we saw. Any comments? Should keep going.
This makes sense because, Helios is a outlaw organization as of them stealing the asteroid.
Absolutely, they are. Yeah,
and if they had a way to get Lee's wife out within like a week or two,
a while. Everyone is just, but like, I feel like the very first thing people would do is like, we are shutting all this shit down until we can go through. We are seized. We like they might just go, like federal agents might show up to Helios's corporate headquarters and just seize everything and just start like hauling boxes off to NASA. Like, what? I think that the Helios has the will, but like Helios is a company within the United States. Like, and I know we joke about corporations having all the power, but they do to a certain extent. But at the end of the day,
yeah, they have soft power.
Yeah, and the United States has actual fucking power. Russia has actual power. They have guns and millions of men and women under arms that will go and enforce the. So it's like you can get away with something like the Mars thing, but like the repercussions and the idea that Helios is like smuggling citizens out of rogue nations, it seems a bit much for me. But you know, reasonable people can disagree.
Sure. He says it's cramped quarters for the six or so people we saw emerge at the other end, but folks have done more drastic things to get to a new life. I suppose so. I put this all down to another strand of Dev's grand plan to make Mars independent, going on in the background with us, without us needing to see the detail. I thought in the end they played fair with this.
So I think the best explanation is in 1776... The Continental Congress sends King George a resolution saying, peace, we're done with your bullshit. All this stuff that was yours in America is now ours. We're not sending you any more money. We got the whole French and Indian situation under control. And in this timeline, King George looked at that and been like, is it really worth sailing over this ocean to go kick these people's ass? Or should we just write this thing off? Mm-hmm. And King George, presumably not mad, said, nah, it ain't worth it. That's a hell of an assumption for a show to make and kick the plot forward 10 years into the future. Imagine that on HBO, some adaptation of a What If Revolutionary War, and the Founding Fathers sent off the Declaration and they get it, and King George opens it, and then it's like he kind of shrugs, and then you get the subtitle, 1786. What? You know, yeah. I need to know, like, what happened? What did Earth say? Like, and even if King George was cool with that, what did Parliament say? What did the people that were creditors to the nation of England say that owed them a bunch of money because they've been pumping a bunch of money into their colony that now has just been stolen? All that investment written off. Like, I don't know, man.
And with the way they held the climax of this for the finale, we kind of had to know that this was going to be the case. There was just no time to deal with ramifications this large, because this is global. This is enormous. You know, this is system wide now. There was no chance we were going to get it. My only hope now, I guess, is that they come back with their big montage and the newspaper clipping, or I guess like the website postings and the Fox News anchors that they have. These talking heads are going to spell out a story that is believable as to how we can get to Kuznetsov mining station, right?
It's just a lot. It's a lot of yada yada-ing. And I realize that when I was going on my rant just now that I sound like George Martin criticizing J.R.R. Tolkien, where he's like, oh, so King Aragorn takes over and he rules in peace for like a couple hundred years. Well, I want to know what he did about the orcs. What was the tax rate? How did he reestablish normal relationships between the... And I'm like, oh, well, you're, you know, Lord of the Rings isn't that, man. Lord of the Rings is epic kind of fairy tale fable, and Game of Thrones is like real politic, right? I thought For All Mankind is a clock closer to Game of Thrones than it was Lord of the Rings. And
same
we're getting
here.
Lord of the Rings. We're getting this. This is you know, essentially you bow to no one, friends. And I'm like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. They're just going to ride back to Shire. Everything's going to be fine. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Greg continues here. Second, like you, I was initially disappointed that we got little Kelly in the last episode and nothing about the crater and the search for life. However, given that Dev is at the crater as we make the time jump to 2012, I think they've hinted that this thread continues into season 5. In fact, with Aleda and Will on Earth and Kelly, Alex, Dev, Lee, and Miles on Mars, there are the foundations of a good cast of central characters with the options open for including Ed, Danielle, Margot, as much or as little as contract negotiations and plot allows. We don't yet have quite the depth of engagement with the new cast as we have for the first generation cast, but the work they've done with Aleta, Kelly, Dev, and even Miles in one season has put real flesh on those bones, and they're all characters I want to spend more time with into the 21st century. They're playing a very difficult game, writing a series with between-season time jumps this large, but I think they can be pleased with how well they pulled it off so far. I know I'll have to wait a couple of years to see where things go from here, but I'll be there to follow along wherever they go.
Yeah, I can't imagine stopping watching the show. You know, it'd have to and even then, like, what, we got three more seasons? Like, if they get their dreams, like, that's still probably something I would watch just for grim satisfaction, if nothing else. But I think of it like you got the set of characters, you know? You got the set of characters in season one. You got the set of characters in season two. You got the set of characters in season three. And those sets always overlapped to more or less extent. I think this gap between this season and next is going to have the smallest set of shared characters. And I think that is a concern.
Feels like it.
When so much of this action works when you care about the characters. And I agree with you. Leda, Kelly, Dev. But when you go and even Miles, no. I don't think Miles counts. I don't think Sam counts. Like I said, in better seasons of the show, we would have already met Miles and Sam last season, and we would have seen, you know, Miles getting pinched out of his job. He would have been one of the, and it probably would have made that season better too, because, you know, it seems like,
yeah,
the people out of work were just cast as crybabies in the way of progress, you know. So like having Sam going through high school, where trying to like get the perfect grade so she can get into the astronaut program, because that's like, she grew up idolizing the likes of Molly and Danielle and Ellen, right? Like all these women, Tracy, like she's got posters of them in the room, and she's just like,
but
that's,
she gets
what
a
they
35
used to
in
do.
Math, and suddenly she's got to be a minor.
She can't go through NASA. She washes out of NASA. She's got to go through Helios. Like, that's what the show used to do. So then Miles and Sam would have been in that set of people that we, oh, I know my, and they didn't do that. So it's like, I don't know, man. I think that if you look at those sets of characters and how they kind of overlap and kind of tug you into the next season, it's not nearly as many heartstrings engaged.
Miles was a fairly big villain early on. Like, all the stuff he did when he got to Mars was villainous to me. Like, just for his own ends, disrupting Ilya's whole situation that he had going. It was a good thing. And taking that over. Him ultimately giving up the information about his crew. Granted, under torturous conditions, and to save his family. He's a sympathetic villain, but I don't think he's sympathetic enough. I think they could have done with showing, maybe, like you said, last season, or even at the beginning of this season, some of the stuff that he went through to try and help his family on Earth.
Yeah,
I think that would have made him even more sympathetic, and I would have felt for him more. But we'll see what they do with him in season 5. Like, I don't dislike him necessarily.
I think they could have had a Vito Corleone kind of thing, where it's like, you know, in Godfather 2, he sees this gangster who's like kind of like lording it over the neighborhood, and he's getting isolated and people are getting angry at him. And Vito's got a crew, man. He's got Tessio. He's got Clemenza. Mm-hmm. You know, he sees the opening and takes it, where it's like the story they told is Ellia was kind of like this kindly benefactor that everyone, he was Vito Corleone. And fucking Sollozzo moves in and cuts his throat, and everybody on the base is kind of fine with it. Like, Ilya was crewed up with Russian muscle, and Miles had Sam and some other dude that I can't remember his name helping him with a rock operation, and he out-muscled Ilya.
Yeah.
Because he had North Korean
muscle.
Because he had Lee. Because he had Lee with this ridiculous fantasy that I still don't believe. So it's like, it just didn't work. But they could have. They could have done it. They could have done a better job.
I'm with you.
Season 4 of For All Mankind, subtitled, "They Could Have Done a Better Job." Kieran says, "Questions for the wrap up pod. How did Dev, Ed, Miles, Sam, and every other character avoid arrest for their part in stealing the asteroid? Surely sabotaging NASA equipment alone is worthy of serious time behind bars. I would say that we don't know yet, but we see Dev standing as a free man in the closing scene. Maybe he served his time by then. Well, I mean, that's like, that could be like literally the week after it happened. It takes a month to get to Mars. But that's the thing. It's like, I really thought they were going to have Ed and Dev and Miles with some kind of slick ass way to back Earth off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you try to steal this asteroid for us, we have planted mining explosives on it. We're going to shatter the asteroid and it will wrap Mars in an impenetrable layer of debris that any ship that tries to land will be. It's like some kind of that. Like, essentially, we're mining the fuck. Like if you come here, we're going to blow the asteroid. It's going to send micrometeors all over the place, and it'll make Mars in like, well, it'll be no good for anyone. And why mm-hmm. would you do that when we haven't? We already have an offer of, hey, like, I've got the books open with Helios. Here's how Helios can make sure Earth gets its cut. But mm-hmm. like, I really think they needed to fit that into this season so that I would know, like, oh, that's the state of the geopolitics going forward. That Mars has effectively fought for its independence in a bloodless coup. And yeah, they just didn't do it. Another nit to pick is how Sam was still allowed to float free after NASA and Roscosmos discovered the compromised discriminator. They should have immediately concluded that she was involved.
Palmer would have.
Yeah, that's the other, the convenient suspicions of Palmer. Like, mm-hmm. Danielle says, keep an eye on her. And he's like, oh, I'm going to keep an eye on her. And then one episode, he conveniently doesn't keep an eye on her. And the next episode, I've got my eye on you, Mass. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Were you asleep in your bunk when she's like, oh, let me get the discriminator out of my bag? And like, come on. We're watching the show, right? We're paying attention. We should be rewarded for that, not penalized.
Yeah. Ryan S. says, do you guys think Jimmy will be back in season 5? Oh, yeah. Jimmy's alive. If I remember right, he got a 15-year sentence, so he'll be out by the time we rejoin the show in 2012, right? He's the only one left alive who knows the secret about Bad Danny and Karen, I think. Molly's husband still knows. He's still alive, right? He didn't die?
I think so, because that's who gave Ed the weed seeds.
Yes. Okay, so he's still alive. He still knows. But you're right. He's one of the very few. Mm-hmm. And Ed still never found out, so I'm wondering if Jimmy will come back into play and will be the key to unlock that secret for Ed. Or is that storyline completely dead and Ed doesn't even ever need to find out at this point? I think it's that. I think Ed doesn't need to know at this point.
Nah, he's going to get out. He's going to grab the nearest microphone. It's like, I want everyone to know that the George Washington of Mars, my fucking brother, cucked his shit. And then Ed will clutch his heart, die of a heart attack. Dev's dick will fall right off. And Miles will spontaneously combust. And then that, it's like, how can Mars even go forward when you've made their founding fathers look like fools? When your dick falls off in live television, there's no way to recover from that. Rolling out your pant leg.
I do kind of want to see Jimmy back, but also I don't think there's any need to do any
of
that.
It would be funny to see Jimmy, because they're also showing the rise of like a alternative reality Fox News.
Yes. Oh, God.
It would be funny to see Jimmy out of jail being like free radio America, mm-hmm, Alex Jones. Because
NASA
conspiracy,
killed his brother.
Because NASA killed my brother.
And my dad. And, yeah.
Yeah, close to the truth. I could see them kind of introducing that element into the thing, and he would be the perfect mouthpiece.
Oh my God, you're right. It's not what I want for Jimmy. I feel bad for Jimmy. I don't want him to take a villain turn.
No, but you know,
he was an accidental villain last time.
He could be a useful idiot for the right people.
Already has been. Absolutely
true. Chris T says, on two of the criticisms I've heard over the last couple of shows, it seems pretty clear to me that the only reason Margot was able to get away from the Russian handlers to meet Sergei is that she never really did. Letting her, and by extension us, think she wasn't followed is the only way they could have got on his trail. The Russians would know that he's the one person she would try and do this to try to do this to C, and Sergei was dead the second Margot turned up at the diner that night. I actually think this tracks.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
That the whole time we're like, there's no fucking way that they knew all along. That they that this is another instance of Margot thinking that she's smarter than she is and getting hoisted by it.
Totally. Cracked the case, Chris.
Yeah. It would have been nice for some to confirm that somehow. Like, if, you know, but there was no chance for Margot and the Bullfinch to have a private talk.
No. And I mean, his death kind of confirms it.
See, that's another. See, season two of this show would have had a scene where Margot is in like a holding facility in NASA, and the Bullfinch comes in to see her and dismisses the guards and is like, "Did you think that you could get away with, you know, but it right under my nose? We knew that this for weeks, and we just been waiting to." And like, as she's like doing browbeating Margot, like someone like a Russian comes in and like recalls her and like pulls her out of the room. And then like Eli comes in and it's like, man, this asteroid thing is crazy. Russia's recalling all of its assets. They're pulling the Bullfinch, and they've also said that they've withdrawn their diplomatic immunity, and you're our problem to deal with.
Yeah.
So then we would know, like, it's fine, because like I said, we can surmise all this stuff. But like, again, that's a 2-minute scene. It would be really satisfying to see the Bullfinch putting the screws to Margot and then her leash get yanked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So, but again, show not tell, I suppose. Secondly, on a more general point, the lack of acting, there's only like 38% gravity on Mars. Oh, the lack of acting. There's only 38% of gravity on Mars. Seeing how many shows seem to completely ignore this, have you ever considered it just looks incredibly stupid on camera? Like comically stupid?
Probably.
I get the feeling it would look so unnatural during even normal day-to-day living, it would take you out of every scene by turning Happy Valley into Uncanny Valley. I mean,
maybe so.
Other seasons found a way. Like I remember in season two where Ed just throws Gordo to the ceiling. And you're like, oh shit, right, 1/10 gravity. You're like Superman here. Or Danny, like, not having to struggle to lift something. You know, it's like, again, yes, you're right. If everyone's kind of like, well, you can't tell me, but I'm like tilting back and forth like I'm the Michelin man on Moon, it would look ridiculous. But it also looks equally ridiculous when they forget. And there's no fucking frame of reference where any of the physics of that shit that Sam was pulling on her extra vehicular activity walk, it just doesn't work, man.
I don't know, maybe it's the thing where you need either full Earth gravity or no gravity to make it not look ridiculous, because I'm thinking of The Expanse, right? They do this all the time. They sweated that detail most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't look ridiculous to me, but that was largely like there's no gravity. Because I'm thinking of the scenes on Mars. Because there were scenes on Mars. I don't think they did much in those scenes. 100%. Alex walking around, chilling at the bar, drinking.
And
with the drinks they did, they would drink out of special glassware, and the way it poured would be slightly different.
Or I remember when Amos dropped his bottle over the railing and it took like 30 seconds to fall to
the
ground. But you're right. When they're walking down the hallway, they're not like bunny hopping like they should.
Right. And the fight scenes. My God, what does a Martian fight scene look like?
Right.
I think that would be cool in a fight scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're probably right. It would look stupid. But
I think there's a way.
I don't know because I haven't seen it.
I think there's a way they could do it. And it's this obvious stuff. Like they used to do this in earlier seasons of The Expanse where like they would be in free float and like a commander would be leaning against their command post. That would never happen. Right. So it's like just don't do stuff like that. Like don't do the obvious things that people wouldn't do. And you don't have to like maybe have your hands floating like you're a piece of seaweed in the ocean, even though that's kind of, if you see what the astronauts do on the space station, they're like when they're just like hanging out. Yeah, there's kind of like, you know, they look like they're floating in a pool, you know, because they are. So I feel like there's a middle ground between ignoring the realities of the gravity and making it look, like you said, ridiculous. But, you know, I haven't tried it. Maybe you're right.
All right, let's move on to Uncle Jimmy, who says you express discontent with the scene in Perestroika when Danielle is getting stitched up and the camera pans through the line of quieted rioters. Jimmy said it made you think too much. I probably said that. I don't like thinking. I thought it lined up perfectly with the theme you both identified. Revolution is messy, complicated, and involves all types of people. I found myself asking, who's the one to blame for this? It was interesting to consider if any one of these onlookers hadn't participated in their own specific way, it wouldn't have mattered to the end result. The revolution in general, and Danielle's injuries in particular, didn't hinge on a single general. Rather, it was a product of the situation in aggregate, a product of all the people acting for their own reasons at once. And the moving mugshots put that in sharp relief for me.
Yeah, I'm still on Team Jim with this, Uncle Jimmy, because I had the exact, like, I was actively annoyed that these other people intruded into my grief. You know?
Hmm. I was less harsh on this than you were, but I could be misremembering.
Yeah. Well, I feel like sometimes people have a loose handle on who's Jim and who's Aaron, and I get a lot of shit from stuff you say in the feedback
too,
and vice
yeah.
versa. So,
yep.
Anyway, I know what they're trying to go for it, what they're trying to go for. It just, again, I don't care about the CIA guy and Miles. I care about Ed and Danny, and she's dying from what he thinks, and, you know, so. Finally, this is our final email. Tyler from Iowa. Born in Iowa, only lives in outer space. Said Ed was
like
born
Captain
in 19...
Kirk.
Exactly. Ed was born in 1931. He's now 81 at the time jump to 2012. He will die next season or maybe the following at 91. My prediction when he finally goes out, Danny's last words to him will be simply, bye, Bob. Do you think we'll see Ed die or we'll have some kind of funeral for him? Because there is something to Danny being the last Bob that would be very satisfying to have. I could see her putting her hand on his coffin and being like whispering bye Bob and some, that'd be a cool way to maybe even begin next season.
I don't know, man. He's not going to be in good shape the next time we see him with that time jump, if he's alive at all.
Cause he's got the whole,
it's almost sadder, I guess. Yeah. I guess it's like, I want to remember him. Well, shit. I'd have to go back to season 3 to remember him as the guy I wanted to remember him as. But
yeah,
I don't know if I would remember that version of Ed with even worse old man makeup, shaking. He can't think. He can't do anything for himself. He's just old and sitting in a nursing home. That's
counterpoint.
That's sad.
What if Martian science developed some kind of miracle cure? You know, they're like studying Ed and they're studying Ed's grandson, and because he's got health problems, and Demi's a brilliant guy, and.
What if space is the problem? What if space is poisoning him? He goes back to Earth and he realizes, shit, I'm fine. I just needed to get out of space.
There you go. Something we needed to know. Space will kill you. Don't go.
Space will kill you, by the way. It wants to kill you.
It's inimical to life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it. So I guess the only thing that's left for us is to say bye, Bob, to all you. Again, I hope you continue your voyage with Bald Move. We got a lot of fine coverage coming up this year. We're doing in the middle of True Detective right now. That was a fun episode that we did last week. We've got about, I don't think we got firm plan. I know we're doing the Rick and Michonne, The Walking Dead miniseries because we're masochists.
The ones who live.
And completionists. Yep. And those two together gets us in trouble sometime. And I know we're going to be doing, like I said, House of the Dragon when it comes out this summer. We're still coming out of a strike, so there's some things that are kind of up in the air.
For sci-fi, we're going to be taking a look at that three-body problem.
We won't have episodic coverage because Netflix is just going to shit it out in one day. But we will
be
talking about
member.
That. Yeah. On mm-hmm. OTC. I'm excited to maybe talk Jim into covering Shogun.
Oh, yeah, that looks good.
The new series on, I think that's AMC or is that FX Hulu? That's coming down the pike. That was like my dad's favorite novel, and he's always talking about it. I remember the old Richard Chamberlain miniseries from the 80s, so I'm pretty excited about that. Lots of stuff. Follow us everywhere at Bald Move, except for TikTok, at Baldest Move there. And then, we'll see you. Because I guarantee we'll be back for season 5, even with the problems of season 4. Like, we're in it to win it, okay? Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed our coverage and you've been listening to a lot of Bald Move podcast and you need even more and you're sick of listening to ads, we could use your support at support.baldmove.com. Thanks again for another fine year. signing off for Bald Move here. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.